Hello, and welcome to this episode of Criminal Mischief, the Art and Science of Crime Fiction. I'm D.P. Lyle. Today, we're going to talk about gunshot wounds to the chest. Gunshot wounds can hit a lot of body parts, but the chest is a large area, and a lot of them enter there because most people pull the trigger at center of mass. I get a lot of questions about this. Writers send me questions about what happens, how the gunshot wounds affect people, how are they treated, how does the coroner handle them at autopsy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I've gotten hundreds of questions about this over the last 20, 25 years. In the show notes on this show, you'll see three pretty cool questions that I received on this, and kind of hopefully they'll help you with your stories if you have gunplay involved. So a gun obviously is a projectile weapon, you know, the powder explodes in the chamber and it fires a shell, a bullet. And that bullet can have many different characteristics. First of all, the caliber of it. It can be anywhere from a .22 to a .50 caliber. It can be, common ones are .38s and .40s and .44s and .45s. .22 and .23 and .25 caliber guns are used, and they're small purse guns, if you will. So they have a different bullet size. And of course, force times mass. The speed and size of the bullet will affect what happens when it strikes something. There's also, the bullet can be coated. It can be Teflon coated. It can be metal coated. It's called a full metal jacket. It can be partially jacketed. It can be hollow point. It can be a dum-dum. It can be all kinds of things. And you can look all this up on the internet as to see the different types of bullets. But in general, the harder and faster a bullet travels, the more likely it is to penetrate and be what we call a through and through gunshot wound, meaning it goes completely through the body. The softer, slower, larger, and more hollow-pointed or dum-dummed or cross-hatched the bullet is, in other words, the softer and more malleable the bullet is, the more it slows down on impact and spreads, and the more tissue damage is done, and it's less likely to exit the body, especially with a shot to the chest. So all of these things play a factor in what happens, what is damaged, how it is treated, and all of that. So let's just take in general a .38 or a 9mm. Someone gets shot in the chest with it. What's likely to happen? Well, first of all, it may not penetrate into the chest. It may simply embed into the musculature. That happens. It may strike a rib and remain outside the chest cavity, in which case we would call this a flesh wound. It can fracture the rib or chip the rib or not damage the rib at all except for bruising it. All kinds of things can happen. One thing I want to point out here while we're talking about this striking bones is that when you get a gunshot wound to the chest into the emergency room, you don't just focus on the chest. And the reason is that bullet can be found almost anywhere. When a bullet enters the chest, it can strike a rib or the sternum, the breastbone, or the spinal column, the bones of the back, and it can be deflected and ricochet and go in any direction. I remember in training seeing a guy shot in the chest, and we actually found the bullet down in the lower abdomen by the bladder because it bounced off the spinal column and turned south, went through the diaphragm, clipped some of the bowel, clipped the edge of a kidney, I think, and ended up down by the bladder. So bullets do strange things once they enter the human body. They're affected. You know, it's Newton's laws. Body in motion remain in motion in a straight line unless it's acted on by another force. And that's kind of a summation of all three of Newton's laws. But the point is that they do crazy things. And so when in the emergency room, you will not only x-ray the chest, as it were, you will x-ray the abdomen because you got to find this bullet. And when there's multiple bullets involved, you got to find all of them or at least find the exit wounds. Okay, so we got the flesh wound out of the way. But let's say that it slips between the ribs and it actually enters the chest cavity. Well, what all's in there? Well, the heart's in there, of course. Do people survive gunshot wounds to the heart? Sure they do. It's not common, but it can happen. And there's many reasons. It can just embed in the heart muscle and it continues beating and pumping. And there may be some electrical instability, some arrhythmias and stuff, but they survive long enough to get to the operating room and be saved. It can actually enter the cavity of the heart, and the heart muscle is so thick and so strong that once the bullet passes through, it tends to kind of clamp down during systole, during the contraction phase, and the bleeding may not be as much as you think. This is particularly with small caliber, high velocity bullets. And it can embolize, meaning the heart can now pump it out through the valve and down the aorta, and it can go anywhere in the body. So you may find that bullet in a blood vessel in the leg. Now, that's pretty rare, but it happens. Okay, it can damage heart valves. It can hit the atria, which is probably even worse because they're thin-walled and it'll bleed like crazy. So the impact of the bullet to the heart can cause an arrhythmia that can lead to death instantaneously. It can damage the heart muscle so much that it blows a hole in it and it is not useful as a pump, and all the blood goes out in the chest cavity and the person goes into shock and dies very quickly. Or it can cause a slower bleed that fills the pericardial sac. Now, this is the membranous sac that the heart sits in. And when it starts filling with blood or any liquid, because there's other things that can cause it, but when it starts filling with blood, that can start, if it fills faster than it can escape through the hole that is made in the pericardium, it can fill that sac with blood and start compressing the heart. We call this pericardial tamponade. And every emergency doc, and I know I've seen it more than a few times, knows how to do a pericardiocentesis. That's a big word meaning you stick a needle in there and evacuate stuff. So I've done it with gunshot wounds even as an intern. So you see, you stick the needle in, you draw the blood out, and what you're trying to do is decompress the heart because it's being compressed and squeezed by this blood that's collecting in the pericardium. And what you're doing is buying time. So you can get the guy to the emergency, to the operating room and open up the chest and then open up the pericardium and relieve all this and repair all the damage. So the heart is a bad place to be shot. All kinds of awful things can happen. The lungs. So if you're shot in the lungs fill the chest cavity, of course, and when the diaphragm drops down and the chest expands, when you take a breath in, it's basically done by creating negative pressure. You're basically sucking air in through the mouth and nose by the expansion of the chest, which expands the lungs. So you're pulling the air in. And when you exhale, the muscles relax and the elasticity of the chest lets everything contract back to normal and you exhale. Well, this requires that the lungs be inflated and that they function properly. When a bullet enters and strikes one lung and collapses it, we call that a pneumothorax. Pneumo means air and thorax means the chest. So there's air in the chest because you've breached the lung. Air has seeped out into there, maybe blood too. We'll talk about that in a minute. And that lung will collapse. Okay, fine. We got two lungs. You can live perfectly fine with one. You can do well for a long, long time, plenty of time to get to the emergency room. I mean, people can live for days that way. So that's not the critical issue. But as the air collects in there, it can compress the lung and then the heart and then the other lung. We call this a tension pneumothorax. What happens there? You've got a bullet hole through the chest into the chest cavity and the lung has collapsed. And that bullet hole and even the lung itself, they can act as a one-way valve, meaning when the guy tries to struggle for breath and gasp and inhale, you can pull air in through that hole, say in the chest wall. But when you exhale, it closes. So air gradually increases in volume and in pressure inside the chest. So you're basically filling the balloon more and more and more. And in this case, the balloon is the chest cavity between the chest wall but outside the lung. And as this air pocket expands and the pressure in it increases, it collapses that lung further. It starts pushing the heart to the other side and collapsing the other lung. Now you're in trouble. The compression of the heart lowers the blood pressure. The compression of the other lung prevents good oxygenation. This is a death spiral that can end in death very quickly. The treatment is to immediately open that one-way valve. During the war, all the wars, a lot of the medics, particularly back in World War II, kept metal pens, like ballpoint pens, that kind of thing, but writing instruments, and they could unscrew and they take that barrel and jab it through someone's chest. And what that does is open an airway between the chest cavity and the outside. So now the air can move freely back and forth. Remember, that lung, losing that lung's okay as long as the other one and the heart are not compressed and damaged. So what this does is equalizes the pressure both in the environment and inside the injured side of the chest. So tension pneumothoraxes can't do what they do, start compressing things. The pressure can't build. There's also a thing called a sucking chest wound. This is where every time you take a breath, air comes in and out. What happens now, as I said, the lungs work like bellows. The diaphragm goes down, the chest expands, so air is sucked in. The pressure drops inside the chest, so it has to pull pressure in to equalize, and that's through the nose and the mouth. Well, with a sucking chest wound, there's another route. When the guy takes a breath, the air comes in from the outside. It doesn't come through the nose and the mouth, so therefore, it doesn't get inside the lungs, which is where it is where you need it, because that's where it functions from. That's where it interfaces with the blood. So what you're doing is every breath you're taking, you're getting some in the lungs through the nose and the mouth from the negative pressure, but some's coming through the chest wall into a chest cavity where it's worthless. So the efficiency of breathing drops dramatically. And this can cause trouble in a big hurry or in a slower hurry as the guy just exhausts and wears out because he's having to breathe so hard just to keep enough oxygen in the blood. So how do you treat this? Well, you close the defect. Well, you know, you're not a surgeon. You know, you're a PI. You're on the scene. You know, you're the next door neighbor. You're the person reluctantly drug into this little drama that the story you're writing is about. So what do? Anything that'll close it up. You can use saran wrap. All you want to do is create a barrier. You can take a cloth and smear it with Vaseline and slap it on there. There's special bandages that, military medics and soldiers carry out there just for this reason. And so they can slap it on in the field and shut down the sucking chest wound. So now the other lung and the damaged lung, which is still usually partially inflated, can function more effectively while they're getting to definitive medical care. So you can do the same thing. You can take a sheet of plastic of anything that will create a seal and strap it with an ACE bandage. You know, take a plastic page out of a manual or something and put it over the wound and wrap an ACE bandage around it. Anything to close that wound up and prevent air movement. Okay. What else is in there? The aorta. Now, the aorta is the big daddy. That's the blood vessel that comes out of the top of the heart and goes in an arch through the chest and down the back and divides to the two leg arteries. We call them the femoral arteries, the iliacs and then the femorals. Along the way, it puts off arteries that go to the brain, the two carotid arteries, and the subclavian arteries that go out to the arms. So all the blood that goes to the body comes out through the aortic valve and into the aorta. And when it gets shot and damaged, you can bleed out in a big, big, big hurry. It can also happen with abdominal wounds and leg wounds and all that. Anything that hits a big artery can get you in trouble in a hurry. And the same is here. The treatment is pretty much similar to what we've talked about. You've got to evacuate the blood. I mentioned earlier that air in the chest is called a pneumothorax. Blood in the chest is called a hemothorax, meaning heme is blood, you know, like hemoglobin, hematology. and thorax means the chest. And a lot of them are what we call hemopneumothoraxes, which means both blood and air are accumulating in one side. In this case, it could easily be that the bullet collapsed a lung and hit the aorta on the left side, say, and the lung collapsed and there's bleeding into the chest cavity and you've got air and blood and everything collecting in there. And this can become a tension situation. It can become a hypovolemic situation. What that means is low volume from blood loss. It can become a major catastrophe requiring immediate medical care. And this is something that the surgeons have to get involved in. What do we do in that circumstance to stabilize? Well, any hemopneumothorax that comes into the emergency room, one of the first things you do is get a tube in that side of the chest. And this is really not hard to do. You know, you learn to do this very early in your medical career because it's one of those things you better know how to do in your emergency room rotation and maybe for the rest of your life out in your private practice. And you basically make a cut along a rib. You stick some scissors in there to open it up a little more. You stick a hemostat in, pop it in through the lining of the lung, the pleura, and spread it open. You stick a finger in there through this hole that you've created in the side of the chest to make sure that you kind of wiggle it around to make sure the lung is not attached to the wall. And then you take this plastic tube and you put it in there. And now you sew around it and you add it to a suction bottle. And now it starts sucking blood and air out of the chest. We call this a chest tube. And or a thoracostomy tube. And what it does is gets rid of the blood and the air and allows the lung on that side to re-expand somewhat. And there's a lot of other uses for this thoracostomy tube, but trauma is definitely one of them. Now, they also make these things with trocars where you just push the device has a pointed stylet, if you will, but a stylus through the middle. And these things are really medieval and you just push it through the chest wall. When I was in Birmingham in medical school, we used those things until they got banned. And they got banned because one day someone had come in like this with a gunshot, and as they're pushing the chest tube in the trocar, it actually slipped and went into the heart, into the left ventricle of the heart. Well, the surgical resident that did this was actually very smart, because what did he do? He didn't yank it out. Because the heart had been breached. He actually advanced it on into the heart and pulled the trocar out and clamped it with a hemostat. Why? Because the end of this tube has two or three holes in it when you can suck air and blood into this tube and out of the body. He pushed it far enough that all of those holes were inside the left ventricle. So there wasn't a path for the blood to leak out. If it went in one hole, it'd come out another. It was all inside the heart. And then clamping the tube prevented it from going out to the county. Brilliant. Great thinking on his feet. And now the guy goes to the operating room. They go in there. They open him up. They repair the heart. They pull the tube out. Life goes on. The guy survived. So, but after that, these trocar types, and we had to do what we called the cut downs, to get chest tubes in. But anyway, a chest tube is an important part. What's more important, actually, you know, I'd mentioned the atria of the heart are very thin-walled, and they will bleed like crazy. They don't have that muscular wall that can kind of sometimes prevent significant blood loss. And the aorta can be the same way. If you get a small injury to the aorta, a small caliber bullet that goes through it and doesn't knock a chip out of it, sometimes just the muscular wall of the aorta can slow the bleeding down quite a bit. The vena cava, on the other hand, are the major veins. The superior vena cava drains the blood from the upper part of the body and goes into the right atrium. The inferior vena cava drains the blood from the lower half of the body, from below the diaphragm, up into the right atrium. So the two vena cava basically bring all the blood back from the body. Well, they're thin-walled, and you knock a chunk out of one of these, and the bleeding is massive. It just keeps bleeding. And this is a true emergency. You got to get in there and fix this surgically ASAP. There's not much else you can do. There's nothing you can do in the field. Just support CPR, you know, do what you can. But these people bleed out in a hurry. Then there's the spinal column. I've already mentioned bullets can bounce off of it. They can also get embedded in the spinal column, and maybe they can't be removed and leave your character with chronic pain for the rest of his life. But they can also damage the spinal cord. Now, this damage can be just from swelling and bleeding, and over weeks or months it goes away, and any loss of function, paralysis or numbness or anything like that, it resolves and life goes on and the person returns to normal. Or it can damage the spinal cord and they can be completely paralyzed permanently below that level. Or they can be partially paralyzed below that level. One side, not the other, some weakness, some numbness, but not severe, or severe but not complete, and anything is possible when you're dealing with the spinal cord. Now, what parts are paralyzed? Well, in the chest, you know, you got, if you look at the spinal cord, it's divided into cervical, thoracic, abdominal, lumbar, etc. There's the different levels. Now, what does that mean? Well, when the spinal cord comes out of the brainstem from the brain and down the back through the spinal column, it's divided into functional sections where that the nerves that come out of that and go out to the body, they look like a Christmas tree, a spruce tree, with all these branches going out. Well, each level supplies that level of the body. For instance, T10, the thoracic 10, is right around the belly button, okay, the umbilicus. C2, 3, 4, 5 are up in the neck and the shoulders and the heart and all that area. So this is online and you can Google it and just go to spinal nerve levels and you can see this. So where the bullet hits, let's say it hits and completely destroys the spinal cord at that level. Well, where that bullet hits and shuts down transmission of nerves, the person would be paralyzed below that. Now, if it's up in the cervical area, we call that quadriplegia because you lose function of your upper extremities and everything downstream. You lose everything. If it's in the chest, abdomen, then it's in the thoracic area. And what can happen then is that you become a paraplegic. So it's the lower half of the body, but the upper arms and all that work fine. And so in a gunshot wound to the chest, quadriplegia would not be the problem, but paraplegia could be. And the neurosurgeons can go in there along with the trauma surgeons, maybe the vascular surgeons, depending on who's there and what kind of medical center, what kind of facility you're in. And they will go in there and try to remove the bullet and control the bleeding and take care of the spinal injury as best they can. Nerves are tricky. It may or may not work. It may or may not be improvable. Sections of arteries and stuff like that can be replaced with grafts. You know, if the aorta's trash, you can cut a section out and put a graft in there and life goes on. Not that way with nerves. We're not there yet. We're not even close to there yet. So your character could easily be paraplegic from a shot to the chest that hit the spinal cord and damaged it severely. Another thing about gunshot wounds is that rarely do they kill instantly. I mean, the brain, the spinal column, and as I said, the heart will kill you pretty quickly. Other than that, it's a couple of ways. One is blood loss. You lose enough blood, you're going to die. That's hypovolemic shock, low volume shock, because you're losing blood volume. And then you end up in cardiac arrest and death. And we talked about the special circumstances of hemothoraxes and pericardial effusions or tamponade, where the pericardium is constricted by blood and the heart's compressed by that blood accumulating in there. Those are special circumstances, but those are really due to blood loss. It's just it's a blood loss in a special place that creates special complications. Okay. There's also later infection. And out in the field, it's easy to get infected. I mean, gunshot wounds that are treated in the emergency rooms of the best medical centers in the world still have secondary wound infections a few days that crop up a few days later. It's the nature of life. But you get out in the field and get stuff done, and it's patchwork. And you see it in movies and read it in books all the time. They go to the local pharmacy and, you know, get some alcohol and some bandages. And, you know, infection is always part of that almost 100% of the time in the real world. And they can be nasty and they can be deadly. No question about it. In the Civil War, more people died of infections than they did of the actual gunshot. I mean, once you got shot anywhere back in that time, there were no antibiotics. There wasn't many surgical procedures. Basically, it was amputations, and then those got infected. So infectious diseases killed more people than bullets did. So wound infections are real. Well, that's kind of a general thumbnail discussion of what happens when someone gets shot in the chest. And I know that many of you write thrillers and murder mysteries and people get shot. And so if you want your character shot in the chest and you want them to survive or not survive, hopefully this information will help you design your plot and your stories and your scenes so that they are impactful and make sense. As I said, the show notes in this has three questions that people had asked. One of them about how this treated. One of them was about a person that was shot in the chest in 1880. And a third one was how a close range gunshot wound might look. So check those out in the show notes. And until next time, this has been DP Lyle. And I've enjoyed having you here on Criminal Mischief, the Art and Science of Crime Fiction. Until next time.